Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi guys, welcome to the latest edition of Craig Houston Talks To. We've got a great guest known for a few years, guaranteed to entertain you with this podcast. Thank you for coming in, and let me introduce Hugh Burns. How are you?
Very well, big man. Yeah, I thought we were recording about half an hour ago. We were into some daft stories, but no, I'm delighted to be here. I've been watching your stuff online and glad to be a part of it. Aye.
Great. Well, thank you for coming in, because it'd be a lonely show sitting here myself and
talking to myself.
So we've had some great guests, obviously majority of Rangers connections. Great to have you in. So what I try and do is just go through your life chronological order. So let's get back to your formative years, the memory. You're a dark old boy, I'm guessing you were born and bred there. How did what was life like there, and when you get involved in grassroots football, just could you talk us through that, sure?
Oh, listen, I think I started playing with the boys' brigade when I was seven, Craig, and I lived in a little village called Ashkill, just outside Larkhall, and it was under 11, so it meant I had to get down and lie that I was 10 to get in the team. They wouldn't have let me in. I was young, and I forget that. That was my kind of just welcome to football, got on with it, and playing with the older boys. It was great to be part of that at 7 year old. Progressed through the boys' clubs in Larkhall, played with a little team called Hairless Hill Boys Club, and we just seemed to win everything. We had a lot of good kids, a lot of good players. We had great people that looked after us, a lot of good people, and it was just a kind of natural progression to go to a better boys' club. And probably a lot of people don't know this, okay, I was born and bred in Ashkill, Larkhall. And I probably will get a wee bit of stick about it, but I don't really tell everybody. But the fact of it, I'm here to tell you the truth. I was actually a Motherwell supporter, Craig, when I was a young boy. I was a Motherwell fan. And for me, I then went to Fir Park Boys Club when I was 13. And they signed me on an S-form at Motherwell. And so I went in training two days, during the school holidays and what have you, be a part of it. Alan McLeod was the manager. I was playing with Fir Park Boys Club, was playing well, and Motherwell my team, so it was working out great for me. I was playing at Loch Park one night in a school's representative game, and I got in the back of the car, and my dad turned around and he says, listen, we've just been approached by two Rangers scouts tonight. And I went, two Rangers scouts? He went, aye, he says, Rangers want to sign you. I says, can't sign for Rangers, Dad. I says, I'm signing to Motherwell. So at that time, clubs were only allowed a certain amount of players they could sign on professional or S-form contracts. So I was the unlucky one. I suppose it worked out long-term better for me, I suppose. It did, of course, that when McLeod signed me, he put my form in his drawer, and I wasn't registered at Park Gardens. So when my dad then told me that the Rangers had wanted to sign me, and I was totally gutted. I was right in my heart, really. The fact that they did that with me. And, the next night, George Runciman the famous scout was standing chatting at the door, and he came, sat down, and he didn't need to sell Rangers to me. So if you're not officially signed with Motherwell and Rangers come chatting, I signed in the dotted line.
So what age would you have been at this point, Chuck?
Just approaching 14. So their move then was to move me to Gatcosh United, where a lot of the S-forms for all the clubs congregated, really. That's where they put all the good players. We, Derek Ferguson, Big Slim, went there. Rangers and Davy Proven at the time was in charge of us. Big Davy was in charge of the kids, really. And what a group of kids he had. And he kind of darted them all around the city, but predominantly, Craig, most of them had ended up at Gatcosh United.
This is something I was just talking to a kid about last night at training. We were an under-14 team, mm-hmm. and there was four kids signed pro-youth for that one squad at the end of last season.
Yes.
So we had to do a lot of recruitment. So there's a lot of kids that, good players, had replaced them, but I don't know their stories. I know where they're from or whatever. So I was standing talking to him, and he took a wee knock through training, so he was put to the side, and I went out to talk to him, and I said to him, you signed us from? He was talking about that, and he was talking about school football, and I mean, why don't you go to the same school? Lanarkshire boy. Mm-hmm. And I thought, hold on a minute, mate. You, that's four, and you know how much, five, and I know he's Lanarkshire, boys Larkhall. That team's got seven players for Lanarkshire. Coming out of Lanarkshire and coming to our club, which is great because good players and every team wants players. But it made me think, see, back in your day and back in my day, see if we, I was Renfrewshire, Paisley, Linwood, the leagues I was playing in, see if we drew a Lanarkshire team in the Scottish Cup, you always went, because Lanarkshire had a right stronghold of clubs. And I was saying to him, about Jervison, oh, they're rotten. Like, seriously, when I was a kid, your Jervisons, your Mill Uniteds, and there was a right strong community of good grassroots clubs in Lanarkshire, and I think there's still good clubs in Lanarkshire to this day. I don't think it's anywhere near the level it was in the 70s, 80s, and the 90s. I don't know what's happened there. Maybe people can go into Glasgow, or you can go elsewhere and play football easier than we could when you and I were kids.
But a lot of these kids that are getting brought in, for me, at a far too early stage, Craig, and you know, by 10, 11, 12, they've been told they're not good enough. Where that's probably why there isn't strong boys clubs, because the senior clubs are taking these kids in and training them two and three and four nights a week, which personally I don't agree with. You know, you let the kid, you know, fly the nest and decide what club he wants to go to. I don't think kids should be settled down with any particular club at a really young age. So that stopped the progression in the boys' clubs, and nobody coming through. It then stops the school's football, because it was our aim then to be an international, you know, at 15, which I was lucky enough to get as well. So it was, you know, it was Lanarkshire schools, Scottish school boys. That doesn't happen now, Craig. And then the next step is going full time. So it seems to be these kids that are in, they're tossed in the scrap heap early on, and they're out the game. So I just think the structure of the game right now has got a real detrimental effect on kids coming through.
It's funny you say that, because God rest him, no long before Walter Smith had passed away, it was about 6 months before we were aware he was ill, and I was talking to him on the phone one day, and we were talking about kids football. We were on the phone for about an hour. Rangers had just beat Celtic, and there was 5 minutes talking about Rangers, and the other 55 minutes talking about kids football. It was fascinating for me as a guy, you know, the man's a demigod to me, and my connection to grassroots football was a great hour chat. And one of the things Walter Smith said to me is, he says, see, if I was managing the Rangers, he said, if I wanted to sign a boy, 22-year-old, I'd normally offer him a 3, 4, or 5-year contract. But see, if I want to sign a kid at 12, it's a 10-month contract, basically, you're signing. That's all you're committing. And he said, and if clubs had to do the same with the young kids as they have with the, you know, the younger pros,
yeah,
and they had to commit to them for 3, 4, and 5 years, you'd probably find they wouldn't be as quick to pull kids out of grassroots. Came back to him and I thought, that's a fascinating insight there. Your kid that signed when they were, what, too youngest, they can sign them about 11, but we've got kids at 7 that play for us that are training with Rangers and Celtic, and they might train with them for 3 years before they're old enough to sign. But that kid could be training with Rangers, Celtic, Motherwell, Hearts, Hibs, the whole, it's crazy, right, the system. And I thought, that's a crack natural insight. But so your time, you're playing for Gardcosh again, a good club at the time. And who was there? Who did you play with at the time that made the grade?
Well, it was quite funny. In the particular Gardcosh team, I was quite fortunate that I then made the step up. There wasn't a lot of them. There was a lot of S-forms. But the one that played with me was John McStay. John was a lot call boy, strangely enough, that played at Gardcosh. But they were all S-forms that didn't really kick on into professional careers, but they were all good boys. But I was so fortunate and to be a part of a youth setup at Ibrox at the time that was, and I sing his praises to everybody and everywhere I go, was David Proven. And I don't think David Proven ever get the recognition at the club that he deserved. And I get down to, I don't know whether he just didn't fit into the setup at the time, as it happens with players, if your face doesn't fit or what, you never seem to be a part of it. But that big guy gave his life to Rangers. And then wasn't he really well treated, Craig, at the latter end. But I'll go back to players like brought myself through. These are all boys that David Proven, George Rinseman, God rest him, Stan Anderson, all brought in to become S-form signings. When John Gregg was a manager, that then became apprentices, then became predominantly all international footballers, played a lot of games for Rangers and made Rangers a lot of money. So I'll start at the bottom of the ladder. I'll start with myself, of course. So I come through. Robert Fleck comes through. Ian Durant comes through. Derek Fergus comes through. David McPherson comes through. Kenny Black comes through. And they're just the ones that kind of come off the top of my head. Now, they're all players that further down the line, when Souness came in, Souness used everyone, obviously, bar me, right? But we'll go into that later on. But you know what I mean? The amount of players that David Proven had brought through into the first team were all brilliant footballers. Billy Davis was another one. Me, Billy should, for me, had have been... Well, he was a brilliant player at youth level, but Rangers were rich at that time. And our big game at Gardcosh United was, surprise, surprise, Celtic Boys Club, Barrowfield. Wow. Because they knew I was an S-form signing with Rangers. And even at the age of 13, 14 and a bit, I was the biggest on bastard in the world. which was fine until my dad got into a wee bit of altercation one day. Something, this is all, you know, at football level, at kids level. But Peter Grant played with Celtic, right? And even then, Peter was running about pointing at everybody. Peter the pointer. So I was actually playing centre-back. And Peter was centre midfield. Because we always had tussles, but him and I played in the Lanarkshire schools together. And even to this day, Peter and I have got some good respect. And we like one another, to be fair. We got on well. I get Peter. He's a Celtic man that played with Celtic. I'm a Rangers man that played with Rangers. And that, in the 80s and the 90s, probably... That's the way the players were, Craig, you know. But a great upbringing for the Firth Park Boys Club to Gardcosh United to then getting the call up to go in and to do the boots, and you do your first year apprenticeship at kind of just 16. I don't even think it was 16, I think.
So who gives you that news? How does that actually work?
Well,
how does it come about?
What happens is you get a phone call again for the club. Big Davey takes you in. And at that time, Greggy was the manager, had just got the job. John Gregg was the actual manager of the football club, and Greggy takes you into the boot room, and it's a very casual chat. I mean, listen, you're doing well with the boys club, you're thought highly here, we want to bring you in and you want to do your first year apprenticeship. It's basically, you've got a full year, you're on trial, it's high, and if you still play with Gardcosh at 16, you could still play there. I'll tell a lie, no, that was coming to an end, Craig. What happened then was, they put me junior. Right, they farm you out because you're just not good enough to go into the reserve team. You're very young. The reserves let bring a lot of good players. So my first junior club was the Benz. They put me to the Benz at 16. And it was quite a difficult one for me because at 16, at that time, the juniors set up was all kind of ex-pros, experienced. They could all play. And I remember going to the Benz and actually not getting in the team. Believe it or not, I couldn't get in the team, but there was a guy playing at right back, and I forget his name was Ali Marshall, and he was a Scottish international fullback at right back. He was a good player, And I couldn't actually get in the team at 16 because he was there. So Davey got word of that, and he says, listen, I'm going to move you. I want you playing. He says, I'm not wanting you to go and be on the bench at the juniors at 16. So he moved me to Cambuslang Rangers. So that was a great move for me. Somerville Park, great setup, good crowd, quite intense, easy to get to training. I trained on a Thursday night, I trained at Ibrox every day, and went down on a Thursday. Manager there, a guy called David Thompson, David McCulloch, who was an ex-pro, and I played with a lot of good older pros there. And it was great for me to be in amongst that. I'm with, you know, the Rangers during the day, and then I'm in with the juniors at night, the right old school. So for a learning curve, it was really good for me.
So you're 16-ish, mm-hmm. around 17.
Yeah.
Didn't it work out for you a bit? I mean, you speak to Frank the next time I'm on a bender.
Oh, tricky ends, aye.
Came into bother for not being you again.
So
you're into Cambuslang, 16 to 17 year old, playing it right back. You must have came up against some big stud geezers and going playing against kids relatively your same age, apart from when you're a liar at 7 and playing in the under 11. But the physicality is a massive step up. So how did you cope with that, Chuck?
Well, I was always I was always kind of ahead of my years with my build. You know, I'd always like big legs. It was strong and not overly strong that, you know, I went win everything. But I'd always put my foot in. Nobody really intimidated me. But I just kind of, that was always a part of my game, Craig. I was never really worried about who I played against. As long as I put, you know, my show on the road, then basically I could match who I was playing against. So for that point of view, yeah, again, the juniors, littered with old ex-pros, and what better at a 16-year-old that you're playing with that, and getting a wee nick here and a wee nick there, and learning and biting back, no biting back, playing with players that are helping you, and it was a great development for me at that age, and that just seemed to be the way it was. It wasn't the 21s, what it is now, or the reserves. It was you went junior, and you to learn your trade, and some get fun out, and some kicked on.
So how long were you at the junior level?
1 year, in fact. Somebody told me a fact. I don't know, you could probably check this or no. I don't know if it's true or no. I'm only telling you what the guy told me, and he was quite adamant that the year I played with Cambuslang Rangers, the start of that season in the Central League, the same season but the different year going into the new year, I played for Rangers in the League Cup final at Hampden. So I'm starting the season at Cambuslang Rangers, and I'm finishing the season at Glasgow Rangers. So I must have been doing some right back to be getting in big joke slots.
So who was the season pros? Was it David McKinnon then? Because Davies was on the show just the last guest. So who was the right backs that you were having to try and oust at the
At that the time, Sandy, God rest him, had a long move to Hearts. At that time, Big Joke had brought in Jimmy Nicol, first stint, to kind of take over. Take over David. I think Joke's sitting up. It was actually Greggy that signed David McKinnon, if I'm right.
Yeah.
So obviously Joke had brought in. So really, if I think there was Jimmy Nick, David McKinnon, and again, the right back thing just kind of happened for me. I was, again, more of a central midfield player, a right side of midfield. So that was really, I was playing right back with Cambuslang. But I don't know whether it was big David Proven had seen me, be going back to play there long term. But that was quite unique that season. And I did, probably at the time he didn't even realise it. But, you know, it was a hell of a call-up, wasn't it? You made, an Old Firm debut, you'll go and play against Celtic. And it was the first Gold Cup final, 84. No need to tell you. Goes to hat-trick, bang, bang, bang. Big Aitken pushed him in the box. And it was a one Bonner saved, did the rebound.
That was the last one.
Yeah.
So what age were you in that Cup final?
17.
And this is your debut?
No, I had played at Motherwell in my debut for Big Jock and scored against Motherwell. Quite ironic going back to Firth Park after leaving in a flood of tears. I played in Ross County. I played in a guy, Billy Wilson, who then became Ross County manager. I played his testimonial, went up. That was my first taste of going in the bus with the first team with the Robert Pritzies and the Dozies, God rest them, and all the Coyste and Coop. Went off to play a testimonial with Dingwall, Billy. Craig, sorry. And that was my first taste there. But this so happened that season, I played against Glasgow Celtic.
So your debut, your first competitive debut is against Motherwell.
Against Motherwell.
And Are you still playing with Cambus Lang the week before and going and training with him? Or how did
No. What happened then was they had brought me in to play in the reserves then. Right. So, you know, you come away for Cambus Lang Rangers and Joe Mason, who was Greggy's assistant, was in charge of the reserves along with Stan. And Big Davey overseen things with the youths, but it was part of the reserves. So I'm in the reserves, again, with predominantly the boys I mentioned earlier on, who all played in the reserves. Kenny Lyle, Billy Davis. Big Slim was just getting in the first team. But like I say, Fergie and Durant were coming through as well. Flecky, Big Andy Kennedy. Big Andy played in front of me. So there was a lot of good kids.
So this is all happening quite quick for you then, because you went to Ben, but you're only good enough to get in the Benz. You're playing a League Cup final about a year later.
To play with the Rangers.
Aye. So when you're in the reserves and it's that coming up to your first game against Motherwell, how does that get delivered to you? What's going through your head at that point?
Well, Big Joke was a lover of coming into the dressing room and no saying nothing to MD, but he came in and he pinned the first team squad up on the board. And I think that particular game, somebody had to come along and tell me in the away dressing room, because the reserves and the staffs were along in the reserves, well, the away dressing room. So I had no idea of being on this sheet. And I think it was one of the boys. And actually, if I do remember, it was Flecky. It was wee postal came in. And he went, he says, "Hey, Masha, you better," and he's talking, wee glance. I said, "You better go and check that sheet. I think you're in that squad tomorrow." I says, "Kid on." Because there'd always be the wind-ups, you know. You'd walk down a big custard pie and you weren't on it. You imagine walking back in, slaughtered. So I went down and he named all the squads. It started with Big Peter, Jimmy Nick, through them all, Craigie Parson, blah, blah, blah. Right down, be solo, Bobby Russell, Coop, and Burns. And I'm going, "Well, there's not another Burns in there. There's not another Burns here. It must be me."
So yeah, we're saying Kenny Burns.
I was like, I knew it was the Sam Burns, right? Right, so I went, "Man, no way, I'm in the squad." I walked back up the corridor. I'm like, "Can you believe that?" Skim up and tell the woman in the washrooms, because I would have a bit of fun with him. I said, "I'm in the squad tomorrow." They're like, "Oh, cute, brilliant." You know, back in the day, that was a big thing, Craig. Yeah. "I'm in the squad tomorrow." "Oh, couldn't you get him quick enough?" Up the stairs and asked Laura, "Can I use the phone?" She went, "Aye." I phoned my dad. "Dad, I'm in the squad tomorrow." "Oh my God, wait, I phone your mom, doing it to show up." Just, oh, snowballs, didn't it?
So this is literally the day before. This is a Friday again.
Friday, aye, Friday, squad in the Friday. And, you know, be prepared for Saturday.
And were you on the bench? Did you start
on the bench? On the bench, sharp with Big Joke. And I can't remember who was on the bench. In two subs, you know, and Big Joke was in the dugout. Totten was there with him because he brought Totten. I can't remember our sub. Right, Shoggy, get yourself warmed up. Halfway through second half, I'm out, and the fans didn't even know me. I'm like, "Hey, I'm Shoggy."
Very glad you didn't have ginger hair, and it was Tommy Burns as well.
Like, who's that? Curly Pearman on that. Like, warming up beside the park. I'm getting out here, I'm embarrassed, I don't even know who I am. Like, they would have known, of course, coming through the ranks and obviously maybe hearing things about me, but they're up doing the touchline, warming up for Rangers, and you know, folk are like, "You see him going, who's the boy?"
So you're on, what, maybe 20, 25 minutes?
We daisy cutter for the edge of the box. I hit this thing and Hugh Sprott was a bit unsighted. I remember it getting into this day. Down to bottom right. Oh, dying with him. We're on the corner going daft.
You know, at a position at the time. He's up right back.
I can't remember when I was supposed to be playing, Craig, but I was on the bar and I was just happy to be there. And it was a decent strike. Hugh should have saved that. I met Hugh later in life. And he was like, "I remember you scored against me." I went, "I remember. It was my first ever goal for Rangers." Not that I scored that many. But that was important, wasn't it? Getting on, making your debut and scoring. And you buy a lot of call that night. It doesn't get any better than that.
No, it's all right. And to top it off, it's a team that when you were 13, 14, that kind of really great to you.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
So do you become a regular at that point? Or is it in and out? Or how did it pan out the rest of that season?
I think the end of that season, if I'm right, was the world tour. He took us to America, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand.
Did you have a passport?
I had a passport, the worst passport in the world, a big curly perm and a big sheepskin jacket. Right? Every time I went through passport control, guys looking at me like that. What's happening there? I never forget that picture. Anyway, we starts off, we go to Australia, and they pulled me into the office of Big Ian, Big Wallace, and he went, "Listen, He says the under-18s, which I was playing under-18 youth at that time for Scotland, did 15, 16, the under-18s. Andy Roxburgh's wanting to take you to the European Championships in the summer. He says, but I also want to take you in the World Tour with Rangers. And he says, have you made your mind up yet? Big Wallace. I says, Gaffer, no, that would get frowned upon in this day, saying I'll go a World Tour with Rangers, but I'll no go and represent my country. It was a hard decision, Craig, because I was part of the 18s in Roxburgh. I had a good squad, the 18s. But I could see that Joe wanted me to go on the World Tour.
He pays your wages.
That was the bottom line. And I decided, I says, right, Gaffer. And I know I forget him saying this as well. I says, right, Gaffer, I'll go on the World Tour. And he went, right, that's fine. He says, but you're still going to date between now and the end of the season. He says, because you'll end up going to Russia with Scotland. He says, so I want to keep doing what you're doing, or you'll not be going to the World Tour. Bought me up, brought me down in the same sentence. So that's what he did.
And you went to the tour?
Went to the tour, broke into the team. Just naturally put me at right back. I played really every game. We played the Australia national team. We played in Sydney Cricket Ground. We played on the Melbourne Cricket Ground. It was beamed live around the country. It was incredible. We travelled around Australia with the national team, seeing all the expats everywhere we went. We went to Adelaide, Newcastle, Brisbane, Surfers Paradise. I'm there with Bobby Russell. Bobby took me under his wing. Davy Cooper, my hero. You know, there was great players. Like John McDonald. John McClellan, John McDonald. Coiste, Bobby Williamson.
Was that the trip that Bobby broke his leg?
Aye. That was the trip he broke his leg.
Was there no two get legs broke at?
Big Colin McAdam. I think Big Weech done it as well. I think Big Weech.
There was only one of them was on the park, was there no?
Aye, there was one. It was a wee bit. I still think the truth still to come out about that one, but you need to ask McCoyst about that.
Yeah, you're no first.
And I can't tell you. but aye, what a trip. What a trip on that. Forget it. Arrived in Melbourne, went to Rangers Supporters Club, thought we'd buy a Lark Hall. You know, one of these bears that are side of the world. I remember the trip was a horrible trip, of course, you know, and Big Joe had his blazers on, grey flannels, lined grey flannels, sitting on the flight for 24 hours. You're allowed to take your jacket off. But again, rules were different in the days, weren't they? And that was it. But travelling round Australia, we then down into Christchurch, into New Zealand. There was a big banquet that night, and all the players had all their names on the table, and they were all guests of David Cooper, Hugh Burns, Bobby Russell. What an experience. I'm like 17, Craig.
You're thinking every summer's going to be like this?
I think every week's like this. Playing the Rangers, probably. So sitting there, fantastic times. We then, where were there? Where we go to? We go to America. We fly to... Where do we go? To Minnesota. And we play Minnesota Kicks in the Astrodome in Minnesota. So we're on the park, warming up. That time, it's obviously indoors AstroTurf. And there's 50, 60, 70,000 in this place. And the horns are going and what have you. So we go into the park. We're getting introduced. You know, American style, Cosmos style. We're getting introduced to the crowd. And next, it was quite embarrassing, but you had to do it, right? And the next thing, the Minnesota Kicks turn up in these big yellow taxis. You know, the big yellow... hanging out the windies, waving at the fans and all that. I mean, like, where was they? I just couldn't believe it. Laughing on the side of the park. Weren't they laughing at the end of it? They absolutely pumped it.
Aye.
Well, they were all ex-pros. I just try to think of them. I remember the boy would be Italy, Roberto Bettica. See, players like that were all coming to America because they were getting big money, Craig. That's why they were doing it. I was playing against this wee winger. Oh, man, to screw me out of the park at the end of the game. Right, and that was AstroTurf. They had me twisted and turning, big joke shouting at me. I was sweating. I couldn't breathe. I was like, oh, my God, what a dude we got. But just being there was, again, learning curve. Played one game there, and then we finished off the World Tour, made our way to Canada. Took us to tennis to the Park Plaza. I remember staying at the Park Plaza, and we played there, and we played in Hamilton against their national teams.
So how long were you away?
3 days.
2.5 hours.
No, we were away a month, a full month of, well, you think about it, right at the end of the season, and that was a lot of miles to cover in a month, wasn't it? And then come back into pre-season.
So we straight into pre-season?
Well, I think we got maybe, I don't know, maybe a week, 10 days to recover from the, and you know, it wasn't a mad boost session either. Again, big Jock being Jock, you know, if there was a curfew, he was waiting on it. He would be in, the hall in the hotel foyer waiting on you coming back. So there was nobody messing about. So it was a massive exercise for the club, again, to promote the club in that part of the world, which had been done well because bears were everywhere. So obviously they picked the countries well where we were going because all the expats were there.
So see, you're a young boy, you don't get the same sort of ties as some of the older pros that they're playing with, who had kids and married and all that at the time.
Yeah.
So they basically finished the season, jumped on a plane, 24 hours way down to Australia and New Zealand, get into Canada and America on the way back, get home, get a week off, and then we're in for pre-season training. Yeah. How did these guys get holidays and breaks? Were they all demented?
No, I don't know. I think there was kind of all quite settled down at the time. I was obviously the young boy in the party. So I would imagine their wives had probably had their holiday when they were away that particular year anyway. But there was a lot of happy faces when we came back to Glasgow.
Better us. And who was your roommate for that?
My roommate, he changed that about, but it was predominantly Eric Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Kincardine. I was just fascinated the way he spoke. It was only 20 minutes to the road. But I was like, hi, how are you doing? And when I met him at first, he had this big twang. But I got to know Fergie quite a decent player as well. Big Joe quite liked him.
Was he centre forward?
He was the same. On that trip, believe it or not, it was quite strange because Stuart Monroe was on it. And Ian Ferguson, who I room with. And you know those two guys met their future wives on that trip. They met
curfew wife. Did they work then, did it?
No, they were allowed in.
So how did that come? Was that just at functions?
I remember. I think that was actually functions and getting the odd night out. They met. I don't know if I think Stuart's still in Australia,
yeah.
But I don't know if Ian Eric Ferguson's still with the girl he met, but he married her.
That's incredible. Isn't it?
Must be easy pleasing Australia. Fergie's getting married.
did he have a career after? I remember him in the team.
I think he went to Dunfermline.
Oh, that's
true. We're no short either, but this big massive snout, right? And
speak for yourself.
I know. But Stan Anderson used to give him dogs abuse about his size. Especially at Team Float, he's not like Stan would shout at him and all that, but he's big bugle. He was standing next to Float. But it was an eye opener that trip.
My memories of that. A young boy and the team 40 at the time, the pinstripes, yeah. Home strap and the white with the red and the blue pinstripe for the white strap.
Yeah.
So the sort of first team regulars would be in the blue,
right.
And the boys and the resies would be in the white.
Yeah,
and I used to go through the 40, you could name all the ones in blue, no bother. And then I try to get to remember all the ones in the waist strap. So, you know, the Eric Ferguson's and stuff like that. And
Andy Willock, remember wee winger. Billy Muir, ones that kind of just come to me. Tam Lehman, you remember the story about Tam Lehman?
No.
Signed a boy for the Ireland, and he was in the reserves, and he was mad as a brush, this boy, and he made his debut for the reserves, and he put his tap on, back to front running down the tunnel.
He's excited, aye.
They're like, Tam, man, but you've got your tap on the right way. Hover, Roxy. Change the one halfway. Damn women.
There was a lot of boys brought over for Northern Ireland.
There was young Philip Nell,
yeah.
Tam Lehman. They were good. It didn't work out for the boys, went back here the road. I think Philip went on then. We didn't get in the Irish leagues. I don't know what Tam is doing now.
As a pal of mine, Brian Kennedy, he'd done the same at the same sort of time. He found that and ended up on field Clintorne and stuff like that.
Like, I feel it, you know, for coming for the troubles earlier and the Rangers were saying you get in the ferry or you're going to play for Rangers or be part of the club. What a feeling that must have been for the boys, Craig. You know what I mean? I know what it's like for us being here, we were all Rangers boys, but to come for the island and his pals knowing they were with Rangers and in full time, it must have been
legends in the street without even playing.
Exactly, totally.
It's interesting. So come back for that trip in the first team regular by that point.
Yeah, that's when I think the gaffer had made his mind up about me being there long term. And obviously then I didn't know what was happening. I remember we're just back to the trip, and then I get the phone call, doing into the boot room, Joe Mason says the gaffer's want to see you. So you get up that stairs, knowing you did well on the world tour, but you really didn't know what you was getting to when you're going up into his office. So as the people would know, Big Joe was a big intimidating guy. He treated everybody for the last season of Washhouse. De Coop, who was the top player, the exact same. Everybody get kept in the same level. And he was sitting, shut the door, and I went. And I didn't know what was happening. I knew I did well enough for him that I would get kept.
Sorry, you've passed your first year apprentice at this time?
I'm just coming out my apprentice, but no sign my long-term contract, right?
Aye.
Because the long-term stuff came after the tour, because I'm still only just 17, about 18. And so sit down. He says, there's very good reports in the reserves for Wally Waddle and Mr. Fail about you. He says, I've seen it for myself in Australia. You could be a part of this club for a long time. He says, I like the way you go about your business. He says, I'm going to give you a long-term contract.
Hi, guys. I'd just like to take a minute to talk to you about NordVPN, which is a company that I use their services. I use it majority of the time when I'm traveling abroad, when I want to keep up to date with the programs I'm watching at the time, or more importantly to me, the sports that I want to watch when I'm abroad. So it doesn't matter where I am in the world, I can still watch the channels and the games and the sports that I want to. It also gives me security and some privacy that I'm looking for when I'm browsing the internet. They've got an exclusive huge discount available to viewers of the podcast, and they'll give you an additional 4 months free and top of whichever package you go on if you use our code. To get that, plus a 30-day, no quibble, money-back guarantee, all you need to do is log on to nordvpn.com/Craig, C-R-A-I-G, and that'll get you the exclusive discount plus the 4 months free on top of whichever package you go for.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So, go and give them a look, guys, and certainly I've had no problem using them in the times I'm travelling abroad, so I mostly use them. Thank you very much.
And by this time, Mars is making buttons. I'm sitting there and I'm going, what's coming here? No days, no agent, no nothing. I get straight in. He says, I'm going to give you a 3-year contract. He says, your wages will go for what you're on the new. If you play in the first team, you'll get £300 a week. You'll get £100 appearance money, and you'll get £100 win bonus. Because we were still only one about 100 quid, because we're only just still kids. And I mean, how does that sound, Huey? Shuggy, used to say Shuggy. I says, Gaffer, that sounds amazing. I says, that's brilliant. I says, if I'm not in the first team, what's going to be my wage? He says, you'll get double what you're getting in now. He says, but your incentive is to get in the first team and play. He says, and you're no far away from being a regular after what I saw. The gods strike me down dead, and I tell a lot of people this if I go out and day dinners, what have you, and it's true. And not a lot of people will know if you hadn't been to the dinner. So he says to me, he says, I'm no long back up the road anyway, because he's second stint for being at Leicester. He says, where is it you're fae, Shuggy? I says, I'm fae Lark Colgaffer. And he looked at me. And he says, see that 3 year contract's on? That's not 5 year.
Stop.
Laura, get in here and change this contract.
No.
I swear. We go straight, we're doing dead, honestly. Laura, get in here and change this contract. And Laura came in. He says, change that to 5 years with you. 5 year deal. Because I told him it was Phil Arcole.
Party at Larkhall that night, was it?
Couldn't believe that. Couldn't believe. 3 year was good enough. 5 year was stratosphere, wasn't it?
Unbelievable.
So that was me again here, Matt, night, and gave my mum and dad good news. I was only one because they were a big part of my life, and my papa, who lived with me at the time, he was a wee ex-footballer, and he played in the junior level, and they were like, we were all together, the 40s at that time, me, my mum, my dad, my papa. Because yeah. Neighbours are still straight, and the house and everything was always discussed with us four. So it was like, oh, the hard graft, the day in the school runs, yeah, and day in the staff, and it was nice just to sit that night and know that I'd signed a 5 year contract for Rangers. And get it for my mum and dad.
Oh, I mean, proud parents, everybody's proud of their reins.
My dad kept his cell out the road. My dad was the one of the pushy parents. My papa, he slaughtered me because, you know, he would come to games and sit in the back of the motor and give me dogs abuse the way him, but my dad would say nothing. I knew if I did a bad game, my dad would say you had a quiet game.
Aye.
Basically, shite. But the wee and wee Huey, I was named after my grandfather in the back.
You get tore in.
Slaughtered. Early dinner, and oh, my mother says she used to be listening to that Radio Clyde. Burnsy's got a booking on when we're getting beat, and we're like, oh, the dinner's going to be a nightmare the night again. So it was the happiest dinner in the world when Rangers won. It was the worst dinner in the world if we had lost. But that's the way it was.
So, some good times. I mean, I remember I started watching Rangers as a kid and going to games. I was born when we'd won trebles, but I have no memory of it. I was too young. So I started going to the games 80-81. That was sort of my time. And I remember the Scull Cup final. We won a trophy.
No.
It was massive to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I've been full circle with Rangers. You know, we went for that to, you know, Revolution that happened and we were 9 in a row and then obviously Admin and
yeah.
It's been like that. But to have lived through that time, getting to a Scull Cup final was a massive, and winning it
yeah.
was just incredible. And I said to Davey as well, I've got a soft touch for that pre-86 teams because that was my Rangers. Do you know what I mean? And my dad would be, and my granny would be telling me all these wonderful stories about Willie Johnson and Colin Steen, and you know, even before that, the older players of my granny would go on to me about. But that was my Rangers team, mm-hmm. and I think sometimes the quality of the players that were in that team and the squad at the time don't get the appreciation that they deserve. Mm-hmm. It was tough times for the club, but we still had some good players.
Yeah, there was tough times for the club, and I was talking about the players that came through. And then survived the takeover with David Holmes coming in and Souness then coming in as manager. Again, all those players, Souness used them all. There's a lot of players that he used. So I remember the 84 Cup final. Big joke was a lover of taking the team to Turnberry. And again, he enlarged the squad a bit because it was a Sunday kickoff, which we had never heard of either. And it was sponsored by Scull. And it was televised. So it was a big thing. I played in the semi-final against Dundee United, but knowing in that game, Ian Redford, who sadly no with us, Reddy had got booked and was then suspended for the final. Pritzy had got injured, was then suspended for the final. So I'd been doing well in the reserves and on just, you know, the edges of being getting in the team when he picked this big squad to go to Turnberry. And chuffed to be in the squad. The paper reports were the team was going to pick itself. Again, no longer with his big Colin McAdam. Big Colin was always going to be one of his subs. It was really between myself, Flecky, our wee Derek Ferguson. Three young boys, really. Didn't have a lot of options. That's how thin the squad was. So from that point of view, I got a bit of luck when the squad was dead, bearing a wee bit to get in. But I remember him. He named the team at Turnberry. We trained down at Troon. We went back down to Troon to train. Came back up and I trained like a dog as if, you know, I'm letting him know I'm here. And I remember him saying to me in the quiet, Hamdy, he says, you're on the bench because you press me in training on Friday. But he didn't name the subs to go there and get in the dressing room at Hamden. And all the strips were all hung up. And there was a 12 and a 14. And I forget him. I remember as if it's yesterday. It says 12 McAdam and 14 Burn. And I just went, no way. Cup final. God. Arse collapsed, right? And I went, right, okay. So again, not really been in that environment or that situation. And I don't know what made me do it, but within about 10 minutes, I had my gear on, right? Ready to go. And Coyce is like, what are you doing, you silly bastard? He says, we've got another 2 hours before the game starts. I said, there's nobody taking this top off me, by the way, right? So I'm sitting there ready to go, and they're all walking about with their suits still on. I'm sitting there with the bits and the shin gears. Ready to go. See how many tears do I know it today? They're all laughing at me. But anyway, but you know, wanting to park, warming up, and then seeing people that fail that call, folks, Shuggy, like I knew they knew me. And Shuggy, how are you doing? All right, keep your head down, blah, blah, blah. But the game was incredible. We're two up. They come back, as they do, last minute free kick. And then McCoy's gets a winner up the steps. Mental.
That game probably played a big part in McCoy's career going forward, because that was, I think that was him.
Oh, yes.
That was his mark. That was his game.
Yes.
Folk just went, oh, here, we've got something here.
Aye, definitely. He played up front. In fact, that particular game, we started with Sandy Clark and John McDonald up front. Coyce played the middle of the park with Big Slum. So he brought Solo off, put me into middle, put Coyce up to become then the striker with Sandy. So Coyce was a good player, and he was tough, Coyce, and took absolute dogs abuse for a long time, Craig, as we know. Again, the younger fans will know that, the older ones will. You know, remember the Dundee game, the game at Ibrox, when they were Ali, get TF, you know.
I was there.
Yeah, I was sitting in the stand, and I'm like, oh, my God. And Bomber was playing with Dundee. We spoke about that, you know. And he says, oh, it was terrible. Full stadium, Craig. Dogs abuse. Who'd have thought McCoy's would ever get dogs abuse? And then to come through the way he done, what a character you need about yourself to do that.
And I don't think his time down at Sunderland, we'd went for St Johnstone down there, and there was rumours at the time he was going to sign for Rangers instead of Sunderland. It never happened. Went down there for a couple of years. And I think I worked in Sunderland for a while, about 15, 20 years ago. And I often would ask Sunderland supporters, the older ones, what they thought. And they've got more memories of him. It didn't quite work for him, but he wasn't despised there.
No, I think
they could see that it was a boy there with talent.
And he was very young, away from home.
Aye. But when he came to us, it was no bed of roses to start with.
No, it wasn't. And he spent, I think, some decent money on him as well. It was great. Mm-hmm. I think it was £300,000, which was a lot of money back in the day. And again, he struggled to find his feet, hit the back of the net. That's what he was brought for. And it didn't work initially for him, but it wasn't long after that particular game. I think you're right. I think that was the cornerstone of him kicking on in his Rangers career. A hat trick against Celtic in the League Cup final, 60,000-70,000 there. I actually don't remember things that happened in the game, but I remember going up. I remember lifting the cup up. I remember lifting the cup, and I remember going back to a party at Ibrox, and it was win, lose or draw back anyway. Right. So I'd have been subdued if you'd get beat, but you can imagine what it was like.
So the you'd played schoolboy up to just under 18s and whatever with Scotland. Had you played at Hampden before?
I hadn't played at Hampden. No, that was my first time. Even if we took the reserves over, it was Lesser Hampden we played in. So I had never been at Hampden. Been at Hampden to watch Scotland games and watch Rangers games. But no, never been on the park. And it just seemed, Craig, it seemed like, oh my God, look at the size of this place. I think as when you're younger, you think, you know, oh, I couldn't believe the size of it.
No, it's no wonder you can't remember much about the game, but the stuff they build up and all that.
40 years ago. 40 years ago, the game. You know what I mean? Build up. I remember the build up and going, I'm getting in the bus and fans here, obviously, for both sides, getting pelters for the dart side. And again, I was kind of incognito because they didn't know me. But the usual suspects got it, but just laugh. But again, a new thing for me was, you know, driving from Turnberry. And Hank hitting maybe the outskirts of Glasgow, and Big Joke does his favourite thing, taps a wee bus driver in the back.
Tunes.
Get the tunes on. And then there's a funny one, isn't it? There's a funny story about a wee pixie was in the bus and he comes up and big jokes like, sing. and pixie, I don't know the words, gaffer. He says, well, fucking hum it then, son, hum it.
Hum it in Swedish. Oh, incredible. Imagine that today.
Hum it right in his face. Well, brilliant. So Big Joke loved the tunes. Because, of course, the Big Joke loved the tunes because they wouldn't have known what's going on outside. You know, and especially getting up, you know, London Road and you're getting into Selly Park, you know, the game's further down the line. And you're sitting like, ah, sure it is all. They're not singing, but they're all fixed doing the work for you. And they're giving you dogs and you're belting out the Billy Boys on the team bus. Tremendous. And then obviously, again, back then, it was Jimmy Bell drove the bus then as well. There was a guy just before Jimmy, I forget his name, he knew exactly when he turned it off. So maybe we just pick up what we're listening to on the bus when we went to Celtic. But that was Big Joke for you. And that was, you're right, that was the days for you. That's my arm.
So you, what year did you make your debut?
I think 84. I think that just prior to that, Skull Cup final, that's when I started getting into the first team. Just at the kind of into the new year of the 84 season.
So many games would you play against Celtic? You ever looked at that?
I haven't really looked at it, but I wouldn't be far away from maybe double figures anywhere. But I think
it's got to be 10, 12 weekends.
I think I'm running about that. But at that time, they were predominantly, well, Aberdeen, of course, were the team that just won the Cup Winners' Cup. Celtic had always just the better hand of us. We played in some great games and some right tussles, four each games and stuff like that.
Yeah, four each game. That was in my, I think that's the single maddest game of football I've ever seen.
That was as soon as his first game. He'd come up to watch it. They'd signed him. They'd made the announcement, and he came in. And there was a few played that night. Actually, it was quite decent because David McKinnon played in it. Wee Bobby had played and wee Bobby Russell. There was boys that he'd freed, but he still played them to kind of put them in the shop windows. It was quite decent, but obviously again, surprise. Coisty gets the goals and different things, you know what I mean? So
your time maybe playing out, this is the thing I say to a lot of players. It doesn't matter if you played 10 times for Rangers or 110 times for Rangers or 1,000 times for Rangers, you played for Rangers. And for the tens of thousands that go to Ibrox every game and the hundreds of thousands that support Rufia Farn and possibly the millions, they would give body parts to have played one game or part of one game for Rangers. So it doesn't matter to me that you played 10 Old Firms or 100 Old Firms. You played in an Old Firm game, Shug. That is an amazing... To have done one game for Rangers, amazing. To have done one Old Firm game, tops that.
Yeah.
But to do 9, 10, 11, 12 of them, do you get it? I mean, is it something that you're aware of about how people would have loved to have done that? They just never had that opportunity.
I think I was always quite a people person anyway. You know, I would be at dinners, I would be at young player of the years, blah, blah, blah. So I was always probably a wee bit more connected to punters than probably anybody in the dressing room, I'll be honest. There was a lot of them didn't like going to dinners. I thought... these guys pay your wages. I'm going to go. And Big Joke was a lover of us going to dinners at that time. And predominantly, I was maybe a young player, Coisty was player. So we were doing a lot of double dunts, going to two and then one night. And so you were always feeling what punters were telling you, and I would always listen because I was a punter. I was a supporter eventually after the Murrell thing. I loved it, being part of Rangers Football Club, and being in the team. So. I'd never underestimate how a fan felt towards the club. I would always endorse it. I would always bring that into me because that was in my upbringing, really. So
these number of Celtic games that you must have been fantastic playing in them. What's your funniest moment in that? Stuff that must go in the park that fans just can't see because of the noise and. Attracted. There must be absolute capers going on in these parts during these games. Which are some crazy memories.
I remember one particular time, Parkhead, the tunnel, as you know, it's not as tight as it used to be. It used to be, it was one at a time, could just get through that wee step up going into the dressing rooms. And if there was ever anybody that I wanted to kick at that time, was Maurice Johnston, right? He really was, right? When the old acrobat on and all that during the game, and he would bring it out. But that was his game. He would wind you up. And I'm the easiest guy in the world to wind up. You know what I mean? A steam coming out my ears. And he's shouting at you. And he was flying at that time for Celtic. He was scoring a lot of goals. And I just made sure, this as well, see, if I'm not getting near you on the park, I'm going to get near you. Get up the tunnel at half-time. And I'd done everything but tackle him getting up the tunnel, right? I made it out that I'd stumbled on him, but I grabbed his hair at the same time. And I kind of pulled his hair as he was going up the stairs and he was going back down the stairs at the same time. And I remember him, this clump of hair. And the next thing he's turned around, he's had a swing at me, and all the players are all in about it. And you know, there was no security, and you know, I never just saw the kind of older players that sorted it out. They're into their dressing, they're into mine. Big Joe, what's going on out there? I says, in about that, Maurice Johnson. Never mind out there, get fucking into him out there. You know what one of they want? I says, right, okay, I'll see what I can do. So stuff like that. There was always a bit of respect. Again, they had probably more Glasgow boys, Celtic supporters playing for them, and likewise with us. So it was like supporters playing against one another. Mm. But there was never any bigotry. There was never any, slagging, you know, for that point of view. So there was nothing really. I would tell you, I would be honest and tell you, you know, Coop was funny. You know, Coop would wind them up. Coop would love to wind them up. He was funny. If I went out of the jungle, the far side at Parkhead, and we'd be waiting, the referee coming out, Coop would be on the touchline. And at that time, the jungle, I mean, they put the fences up after, I think, the, what was it, the Thingley game, they get the bottle onto the pitch. And Coop would, Coop would be, cute as you like, he would do, Cooper! Coop would be like, oh, well, listen to you, man. Come on, I know, brilliant, isn't it? And he's like, oh, fucking bastard, sorry, man. And then he would just go casually, right? And he would casually not even turn round, but we go to scratch his back, right? But he would just put the two fingers up to him, right? Just the two, and even the linesman was laughing, right? And they were all going mental trying to get through the fence to him. And I'm double up before the game starts. It was brilliant. Hans and the Hat. No, he used to storm his Hans and the Hat. Two fingers and get up, he's right. it was so funny, Craig. Just wee daft things. But I travelled with Coop, so Coop was great for me. As much as Coop was known as the Moody Blue, and didn't say much, Coop was brilliant at singing. He was a great singer. And I used to drive my dad's blue Escort, pick him up. Coop never drove till he went to Motherwell.
Yeah.
So I'd get his wee Escort and he'd pick me up. Pick me up, Masher. I went, I will pick you up, no bother. Picked him up. He came out in the morning. Coop was immaculate, man. Immaculate. Suits in the morning as well, you know, used to, you know. Shaved, smelling a Kuros, smelled them, man. I loved them, mate. It was brilliant. And then Gordon Dale, we'd put 3 doors down. He came out like a vagrant, right? When I see the state of him, he can eat it, you know, have a colon tie, toast, coffee. He wasn't playing, he'd fell out with the world. Surprise, surprise, still is. But how you want to be with somebody and not like the other one, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But even just a young boy driving in, going in was great for me learning.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to sing the songs. Coop used to sing daft songs. And who'd be playing this Hearts? Oh, playing against Hearts. I hate playing against a bastard Walter kid because Walter just kicked him all the time. But Coop never get the better of Walter. But going in, picking him up, taking him home, take me to Willie's, take you to Willie's, Willie Hills, up in Hamilton. But Coop was just, he wouldn't give you a fright, you know what I mean? He's tight as two coats of paint. He would count the money days he'd go to you and all that, right? You picked me up Monday, but he didn't drop me off. Pick me up Tuesday, drop, and he would work out his petrol money to give me. It was murder.
Brilliant.
Murder. But it was a great honour just to have him in the car.
So the Rangers changed. A lot of people, this is something that, it's crazy how history sometimes gets a wee bit blighted by people. A lot of people think David Murray started the Rangers Revolution, but David Murray came in after. Soon as Mr. Holmes came. And
is it Mr. Holmes, is it?
Well, I've got a lot of respect for him.
Okay.
You know.
Well, we can do that if you want.
And the whole thing changed. So Did you go out on loan when Souness came? Is that how it worked? Did you have a bit of time left in your contract? How did what happened when he arrived and the club changed?
I do remember the club changing and going back to that Glasgow Cup final. That was his first game that he came in. But when Souness had 6 or 7 months left his playing contract at Sampdoria, they got Walter immediately from Dundee United. So for 6 months prior to Souness coming, Walter was the gaffer.
Yeah.
And there was never a nicer place to play because we actually raised the bar for Walter and results started getting better. I had played for Walter in the 21s.
Aye, aye.
Right. And I remember him saying to me, I had just missed out in Mexico because Goff was right back and they reckoned that my fitness wasn't good enough to go and play in Mexico because I was doing well with the 21s and I'm in the Rangers team. So obviously, if you can get in the Scotland team, he says, but you'll be part of things here. And when Graham arrives, that's for sure. So that was walking back from Belhousen doing a stint over there one day. And I remember it just went, it'd been all right, so I went, all right, that's all right. He says, Graham's due to arrive. He knows all about you. 21s is good. Press B when I was in charge of 21s, blah, blah, blah. I'm in the Rangers first team. I'm playing under Walter Smith. And I'm the first choice right back at Rangers. So I thought when Big Jock went, it was sad because he'd put me in. He'd given me what I had. He had learned me a lot of things. And I thought when Souness came in, I thought, I've got to learn under a guy like Graham Souness. Especially when I liked him as a player. I always thought he looked apart. He had a bit of quality about him. He was naughty. He looked apart. And I thought, great, I've got to learn under this guy when he arrives. Mm-hmm. So for a few months before he arrived, I was in the team, playing well, and looking forward to him coming to the club. He came in, he did the press stuff, blah, 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 met everybody. First time he saw me was that Glasgow Cup final. I had a really good game, Craig. You know what I mean? Sometimes you come off and you don't. I knew I did a good game. And I went home, I was delighted. And really, that was a breakup for the pre-season then. So we then came in about 4 or 5 weeks later and went on a pre-season trip to Switzerland. But this time, Souness hadn't really sat down with anybody and spoke to them because he'd just come in a blaze of glory. And I remember going to Switzerland and we went on a night out with a guide, took us to his house and out in the hills where the games hadn't started. And we were playing wee silly games. You had to go up and basically announce yourself in front of the players. And I was talking to Cooper at the time. And he was looking around about to get somebody up. And he says, right, Shug, it's your turn. I says, Gaffer, I says, I can't do that. I says, I'm always things like that. He says, come on, get yourself up there. When probably in hindsight, I should have just went up, made an ass of myself. I don't know what they were asking me today. I went, no, Gaffer, I'm talking to Cooper here. Oh, that was it. Oh. He got off his chair at the bar. And everybody went, oh, what's going on here? Run right round the bar to me. He went, you're fucking too good to do that. I says, Gaffer, I didn't know why I did it. He says, I'm going to tell you something right now. He says, my card's been marked about you. Craig, honestly, God. I went, what the fuck is he talking about? My card's been marked about you. Coop looked at me, I looked at him. Because Souness had this aura about him that people were a wee bit standoffish and a wee bit timid of it. For me, and little did I know, that was the end of my career at Ibrox. And I'll tell you why. I had went to a Rangers supporters dance at the end of that season before we get back to do pre-season. And David Holmes was there. And the MC of the night asked me, and I'm only young, I've never done a lot of public speaking, but I'm comfortable chatting, you know what I'm. And he asked me about the arrival of Graham Souness and what it would mean for my career. I says, well, Jock Wallace would be like a father figure to me. I'm gutted that the club parted ways. I says, but I tell you something, if I can't learn under somebody like Graham Souness and play under somebody that I've watched for a number of years, then there'd be something wrong. I says, and well, obviously, the manager will come in and put his own ideas and his own stamp in the club. I says, and hey, strangely enough, we might be allowed moustaches now as well. Right, because at that time, no facial hair.
That's right.
After the altercation in Switzerland, it then came to light that David Holmes had went back and told Souness what I'd said that our supporters do.
But what had you said that would upset anybody?
Nothing, apart from players being allowed moustaches.
That's incredible.
And in the referees room, when I went to see Souness when we get back, he went, aye, fucking bad mouth me. It's supporters do and all that. He said, girlfriend, I didn't bad mouth you. And I knew right away it was David Holmes that had told him what I'd said. And it was just a throwaway laugh, because it got a cheap laugh. It was like, because it was first thing when me Bobby came for you, big jokes like, I've got that beard off, no moustaches, no facial, no not. And David Holmes went back and told Souness what I'd said. And it was just, Craig, it was just nothing, but it was everything, because he'd made his mind up. And Craig, honestly, I was well good enough to play in that team. I was more than good enough. And if I had to get a chance, I just never get a chance.
So other than, which was his first game, but wasn't really his first full season, did you play any of that? When you came back to Switzerland, did you ever play for Rangers again?
Aye, he brought me in, he treated me like a dog. I was back into the away dressing room. Peter McLeod was in charge of the reserves. Peter had turned a wee bit against me. Walter had to, because Souness was, I was his gaffer. And I knew Walter had felt sorry for me, I knew that. But football people look after themselves, Craig, right? And I knew that, and I would nothing ever against Walter, because he had to go where the gaffer had said, even though I knew Walter liked me. I remember one particular Friday, sheet went up, knew I wouldn't be on it, and I was going down into the boot room, we trained, and Souness went, and this is probably the first time he even spoke to me for then. He went, shall I get you playing tomorrow? I said, right, okay, so I want you to play wide here for, don't concentrate on your defending, I want you to bomb forward. Jimmy Nick will play behind you. I was like, oh, I'm in. It's up to me. A really good game. Fans are delighted I'm back in the team. For obscurity, really. Good game. Beat Hearts. Play against Hank St. Mirren in the midweek. Beat them. Still in the team. Wide right. Just Jimmy and I working as a wee tandem. Bombing on. And then went to Hibs on the Saturday. It wasn't as good. We were losing 1-0. He hooked me because I knew it was coming. And I never played for Rangers again after that.
So what caused the gap in the team for him to have to put you in? I mean, obviously, it's fair to say that he wouldn't have wanted to do it, wouldn't have been his first choice.
No,
so
I think somebody had, one of his midfield players had been injured. I just can't remember who it was. The back four kind of was picking itself. It was Jimmy Nick, Big Terry, Slim, and Stuart Monroe. Sure, no. And the middle of the park would have been probably Geranti, Coisty up front, Coot wide left, Big Ted, Cammy maybe.
Yeah.
So, but I'm going through that team again, and there was a lot of them, Fergie, Geranti, Flakey, all boys that I was brought up with there. Yeah. So it was hard and sore to accept that I was the one that wasn't getting the chance through what had been said or what hadn't been said and what have you. And I don't know whether me being a big blue nose and having that persona having it, whether Souness liked that or not, because he never really heard that side of him as a manager. He wasn't really wanting to get involved in all that, the Rangers Celtic thing. He was a wee bit more away from that. So who knows? I'm sitting here at 58, going on 58, and I still feel as if I got a raw deal. I know people look at any jobs again, and we're all doing different jobs, and it's how you got on with the manager, it's how you got on with the people that own the club. But it seems to have been that, it seemed to have kind of followed me through my career. Because the move after that, you'll probably want to go into, was one of the worst experiences that I ever had. As a professional footballer, I went to Hearts. I went to Leeds United on loan. And I got a phone call at my uncle's in Leeds from Alan McDonald to say that they wanted me to come and play for Hearts. And I says, I can't come and play. I can't come back and play against the Rangers.
Why?
He says, Sandy and I done it. I says, I know you have done it very successfully. I says, but I'm going to come to England. I want to come to Leeds. Birmingham was the manager there. I had a couple of games in reserves. He liked what he saw. So it was either Leeds or Bradford just after the fire. Trevor Cherry was the manager. They wanted to take me there. Stuart McCall was there. John Henry. And Valley Parade was rebuilt. So it was one or the other. And McMurdo phoned me. Shoggy, he says, this deal's on. He says, they're going to give you an extra cash payment. You'll get well weighed in. I have 3 years left of my contract. Hearts will pay you. Your wages will go up. It's a no-brainer. And it'll get you playing again. Hearts, at that time, were predominantly taking players for Rangers who weren't getting into the team. They took a lot of players mm-hmm. over the years, ex-Rangers players. So I went home, spoke to my mum and dad. And I knew Hearts had a good support. It was a great atmosphere playing there. It could have been worse moves for me when I looked at it. And I went, right, okay, I fought Big Slim. Big Slim is gutted. Big Slim is gutted because he played in the championship winning team. And was only made available when Hearts made inquiries about him. And Slim was like flabbergasted. They had just won the league for Rangers. And as soon as we prepared to sell him. Because Big Slim had played, I think, left back. He played a lot at left back for Souness. So the deal was more surprising him.
It was a double deal.
Then it was a double deal. So I went to Hearts. Big Slim and I were driving through the M8 to the press conference. We must have looked at the two most depressed players I was in my life.
I'm happy to be here.
Oh, why does it always rain on me?
I've always wanted to play for Hearts.
We're all in Hart Hill. So I got to share it, and it was quite funny because that was on STV News at night. Slim and I sitting there with the meter copiers top on the Hearts, and we're sitting there as if it was for prisoners that were new signings. So anyway, I'll quickly cut to the chase. The reason I'm saying the move didn't work out. 3 years ago, and this all adds up to why this happened at Hearts. 3 years ago, my wee pal Bobby Russell was in the town. It was before the pandemic. I'm having a beer, and he went, "Hi, you, wee Bobby's got a drink in him, and he's funny, wee Bobby, at the time. But I love him at bats." And he went, "You cost me a move to Hearts, you," says to me. I said, "What are you talking about, dafty? I never cost you a move." He says, "You cost me a move." I said, "How'd you work that out?" He said, "I don't know if he's telling you this or no." I says, "Well, when you say that, you've got to know, ain't you?" I says, "What happened?" He says, "Alec and Doddy inquired about Slim. And the only reason they were going to get Slim was to take me." So the phone call for Doddy down to Leeds to bring me back up the road was a lie. To take me to Tynecastle and play me was a lie and tell me that I was only one party deal and they couldn't believe it when Souness then offered Slim was another lie. Sandy Jardine is no longer with us and I'll say what I need to say, and Alan McDonald still does his work at Ibrox. The two of these guys as ex-Rangers players actually treated me worse than what Souness done. I've never felt so far out of things in all my life at being a football club and the way the two guys treated me. I couldn't get into the first team at Hearts for Walter Kidd. My dad couldn't get in before fucking Walter Kidd. Right? And the fans were going, "What is happening here? Why is this boy not playing?" They didn't want me anywhere near the ground. It was Slim they wanted. And it wouldn't have mattered what I'd done. They put me back out. When I went in, I played, put me back out, put me in, put me out. Treated me like shit in their shoe.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.